I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Welcoming Week, a project of the Immigrant Welcome Center that celebrates diverse cultures and what they bring to Indianapolis and Indiana. My guests are Terry Morris Downs, Executive Director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, Angela Adams, an immigration attorney who serves on the Welcome Center's board, and Paul Liu of Cummins, who also is on the steering committee for the center. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week. That's part of National Welcoming Week, which celebrates diverse cultures and what they bring to Indianapolis and Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are a couple of veterans of the program here. Terry Morris Downs, who's the Executive Director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and Angela D. Adams, who's an immigration attorney and also is on the board of directors of the Immigrant Welcome Center, will be joined in. Actually, we have him right now. We will be joined also by Paul Liu, who is with Cummins and is on the steering committee with the Immigrant Welcome Center. Paul, Angela, Terry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us back, John. Always great to see you.
It's good to have you here. Paul, we've got you, I presume, right?
Yes.
Good.
I'm here.
Good. Well, first, I'm going to throw this one to Terry, but I'll let everyone take a crack at it. Talk to me a little bit about what Welcoming Week is and what it's designed to accomplish, and then we'll drill down into, you know, what the events are associated with it.
Great. This is the third annual Welcoming Week in the city of Indianapolis. We do this in conjunction with Welcoming America, a national organization in which we are a local affiliate. So National Welcoming Week is happening all over the United States, and we are presenting it in the city of Indianapolis. And it will bring many events designed to help people get to know someone from a different culture. So these are really geared toward newcomers understanding Hoosier culture and also just bringing new cultures in for other native-born Americans to get to know our new neighbors here in Indianapolis.
And let's talk a little bit about some of what Welcoming Week involves, what events, what things people can do to take part. And I know you've got a big kickoff right this Thursday, just a couple of days from now.
We sure do. Our big kickoff event for Welcoming Week is this Thursday, September 10th at the Athenaeum. It's called Live Local, Think Global. And we will have several business leaders in a panel discussion moderated by Mike Corbin of WIBC, talking about the impact that immigrants are making in Indianapolis and how businesses in the city and nationally and multinationally really need to respond to immigrants and refugees as a potential emerging market. Think about immigrants and refugees in their workforce diversity plans. Think about immigrants and refugees in their marketing plans. And I'll let Angela and Paul talk a little bit more about that event as well.
Paul, I'll throw it to you first and then go to Angela.
Right. Yes. So I'm actually working at Cummins, and which is a very large international company. And I myself is from another country. I was born and raised in China. So I'm just really excited and thrilled to have some of the business business leaders like Maria Rose, the chief administrative officer of Cummins, and also leaders from Lilly and Keystone to actually talk about something that people may not know or may not be familiar with, such as the H-1B visa issues, which are, you know, impacting the businesses, especially Cummins and Lilly. Those hire a lot of international candidates in a really serious way. So I'm really just, you know, as an insider, but also as an outsider, really excited to see the business leaders to actually address these issues and start the discussion on how we can embrace diversity in the workplace and have such amazing diverse, you know, people working for companies in Indianapolis.
Why is diversity such a priority for businesses? I know that's a simple question, Paul, but it's one that has profound implications.
Right. Yeah. So for Cummins, we have embraced diversity since, you know, our founder founded this company in 1919. And one of the biggest reasons that we think diversity is absolutely important to the survival of companies like us is, you know, by having a diverse group of employees, we are able to have a very diverse different kinds of thoughts, solving different business problems. And when international markets rise up and when you actually go to enter a new market, having a diverse workforce will help you to plan the market strategy because they were born, they were raised there, and also kind of, you know, just hiring the local people and getting to know the local culture so that it can really help help your business to thrive in that circumstances. And you know, companies like Lilly and Cummins, we are, you know, all over the world. So by having a diverse workforce, that's going to really help us to succeed in our business.
Angela, Paul made reference to some of the legal challenges that that even in the cases he's talking about, obviously, we're talking about executives. We're talking about not exactly the stereotype of the immigration challenges that we face when it comes to law. Could you talk a little bit about what some of those challenges are? And it sounds like if you can link it in to what's going on this week, at least some of the events have an educational component here, that they're designed to elevate awareness of what these challenges might be.
Absolutely, John. There are numerous issues and challenges within the current immigration system, one of which Paul alluded to was the difficulty in getting H-1B visas for companies like Cummins who are, you know, depend on talent, global talent, to fill these jobs. In fact, this last fiscal year, USCIS received 233,000 H-1B applications, and there are only 85,000 H-1Bs available. So companies like Cummins only got one-third of the visas that they actually applied for, and the rest of them were not approved. That's a problem. That's a challenge for companies that are facing a labor shortage. I think, you know, the event this week on September the 10th, we'll talk with Indy Chamber, leader Michael Huber, as well as Eli Lilly, Cummins, Keystone Construction, and Indiana Farm Bureau, which all of them will talk about, you know, the labor shortage in their certain sectors, but also the challenges that they face and the great contributions that immigrants are making from an economic standpoint and from a business standpoint.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Indianapolis Welcoming Week. It's an event, a series of events put together and promoted by the Immigrant Welcome Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So if people want to attend these events, Terry, how do they go about getting information? Are there costs associated with doing it? Start with that. If they want to attend, where do they go for information?
All information is found on the Immigrant Welcome Center's website, which is immigrantwelcomecenter.org. All events are free and open to the public, with the exception of the September 10th event, which is also a fundraiser for the Immigrant Welcome Center, and that's $30 per person. But all events are listed on our website and will direct you to the proper place to go to register for those.
And what kind of turnout do you anticipate over the course of the week?
Yeah, we anticipate more than 1,000 people will participate in at least one Welcoming Week activity beginning this Thursday and going all the way through Sunday the 20th. We have a couple of events geared toward immigrants and refugees, understanding life in Indianapolis. We've got building tours of the city-county building that we're doing with Mayor Greg Ballard's office. And we're also working with the Indiana State Museum, and they are doing some special exhibits so that immigrants and refugees can understand the history of the state of Indiana and get to know their new Hoosier roots.
Angela, what is the biggest challenge that you know that immigrants face in trying to enter into what is our culture? And I'm not even going to talk about the U.S. culture, because I think Indiana, as all places do, have some things that are specific to this place, some challenges.
Mm-hmm. Obviously language is a big challenge, but I think basically being kind of accepted and accessing resources, which is something that the Immigrant Welcome Center really strives to. That's really one of our main focus, is to help people, connect them to the resources that they need to empower them to be better and to help their families, but also to link up businesses to the resources that they need for cultural awareness and sensitivity, employment opportunities, and things like that. We see legal is another big challenge that immigrants face on a daily basis, just navigating through the complexities of the immigration system and knowing, what you can and can't do and what are the risks and what maybe some of their actions may unintended consequences of some of their actions that they didn't know. So, we see education is another big item that we see as a challenge for immigrants in Indianapolis.
What are the, when you talk about the legal challenges, what is the greatest one, the one that is either the most befuddling or is just the hardest to surmount?
Well, I call this one, why can't they just get legal? Because a lot of people say that very statement. They say, why do we have so many undocumented immigrants here in the United States? Why are we even talking about this issue? Why can't they just go get in line, sign up, and get it, fix it? And the truth is that a lot of times there's no line to get into. And for someone who may have entered the country without inspection many years ago and have raised a family here, have children or a job, if they go back to their country, there is a law that says that they would be barred from returning for a period of time, usually 10 years. That's a personal circumstance that oftentimes, I don't know what I would do in that situation, but sometimes, it's a question of, do I stay or do I go? If I stay, I can't fix it. If I leave, I can't fix it.
Paul, there are a lot of economists out there right now who are predicting that there's going to be a very significant labor shortage within the next 15 years. And in some ways, that's a math problem, because obviously everyone who's going to be in the labor force 15 years from now is already alive. In terms of this from the business perspective, how frustrating is it that you can't move with the fluidity that you would desire to find qualified workers?
Right. So this is actually a really interesting question. But when you look at the specific areas that, United States is really lacking the qualified candidates, is actually in a lot of the industries that Cummins is in, the STEM, the science, technology, mathematics, and, all those kind of areas that will hire a lot of engineers. And sometimes we don't really have enough engineering students coming out of the college that are qualified for this job. So we need to hire students that are from other, countries. And not only to bring a different perspective, but actually to fill the skill gap that we have right now. And we know that the United States is pushing a lot of the STEM education, promotion, stuff like that. But in the short term, I think there is still a huge need for the STEM educated candidates. And by having, policies like the H-1B, visa program, we won't be able to bridge that gap. But as of right now, the gap is just broken. It's because of the broken system that we have here in the United States.
Will there be a competitiveness cost, do you think, Paul, for U.S. companies if they can't resolve these issues? And you've got about 30 seconds to answer the question.
Right, yeah. So one example that has actually happened to me is, you know, when the company cannot get the H-1B visa, they have to send the candidate back to their home country and probably work from their home country. And then there's this tax issues, there's this, you know, travel costs. So it's actually add a lot of costs to the company if they want to keep this talent. And you say Facebook is facing that problem. Facebook is sending people to Canada, and Lilly and Cummins, you know, when they cannot get a visa, they won't keep the candidates. They will either send the candidate back.
Paul, I hesitate to interrupt you, but we'll have to pick that up after the break. We are talking about Indianapolis Welcoming Week here on No Limits. My guests are Terry Morris Downs, Angela D. Adams, and Paul Liu. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week that's part of National Welcoming Week. My guests are Terry Morris Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, Angela D. Adams, who's an immigration attorney and on the board of directors of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and Paul Liu of Cummins, who is also on the steering committee with the Immigrant Welcome Center. And Paul, I apologize. We ran into the break there, and you were, I think, moving toward your conclusion, and I had to cut you off.
Yeah, no. What I was saying is, you know, this skill gap and this kind of broken system for international candidates to get the visas from the government really kind of adds a lot of cost to those international companies who desire to keep all those talents. As I mentioned, it's just the cost of sending people back to their home country and work from them and there, and then, you know, the tax issues and all those kind of traffic issues. But also, you know, if you want to give up those candidates and look for a new candidate, the recruiting cycle normally takes about a month or 2 months, and that's another, you know, time cost that's on the company side that's going to add a lot of complexity to the business operation.
We are talking really about the issues associated with immigration here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I am a woman engineer in Carmel. I have a master's degree, and I've been in industry for over 12 years. Back in 2001, I lost my job. I was unemployed for 6 months. It took 6 months to find a new job. And I applied to Cummins over multiple years and other Indianapolis-based companies, and I know there's something going on where they're looking to hire cheaper foreign labor. I've been in jobs where I've seen just tons of folks come in and get paid less, and we really need to stick up for people living in this area, going to school, our kids graduating with degrees or having to compete with these people. And I think in some industries that's great when there's a real shortage, but if you do research the causes of engineers, you'll see that we aren't getting representatives in Congress. We're businesses are just lobbying for cheaper labor where they have more leverage over, and it's horrible. I mean, I almost lost my house in 2001, and I'm a very educated woman. I did great at work, and I still do great work, but I worry, you know, on the next layoff because I am not, you know, like a cheaper labor source. Am I going to be picked over for an immigrant H-1 visa? And this is a big issue amongst tech workers and engineers everywhere across the country, not just Indianapolis. And we need to solve it before we just increase the limit. There's a reason for the limit, and we need to keep it until wages increase.
Okay, thanks very much for the call and the comment and question, Kathleen. We'll try to get a response for you. I also should say that we've got a similar Facebook comment from a listener named Michael who raises somewhat the same issue, which is obviously this becomes a way for companies to leverage more inexpensive labor, basically. Angela, I'm going to start with you on that one.
Well, I certainly can sympathize with Kathleen and Michael's concerns. And I think that, you know, Paul addressed it a little bit when he said that we're trying really hard, hopefully here in the United States, to increase the so that we don't have a labor skills gap and we have people that are qualified to fill those positions. It certainly is frustrating when you feel that you do have those qualifications and you feel that you are getting picked over. I will say also, just in reference to the wage issue and the hiring cheaper foreign labor and just using immigration as a way to circumvent the wage issue, in my experience, this is just in my experience, I have not seen companies, you know, it depends on the company. There are always bad actors, right? There's always bad apples in the bunch. But with H-1B petitions and in general with the permanent residence process, there is something called the prevailing wage that Department of Labor sets forth that companies must certify that they are willing to pay the prevailing wage that Department of Labor sets forth to say that they're not going to pay below what somebody in that area in that geographical region should be making for that particular position with those qualifications, with that job description and that title. So immigration attorneys work really hard to actually make sure that companies are paying the prevailing wage because that is a requirement. And then even further in the permanent resident process, we have to go through a labor certification to actually go out and test the labor market to place advertisements, and many advertisements actually, more than companies normally would, to make sure that we're not passing over qualified U.S. workers to fill these positions.
And this strikes me at some level that we've gotten to what is one of the primary anxieties about immigration in this country and this culture, and that is the fear that Kathleen and to some degree Michael have articulated, and I'm sure there are going to be a lot more people, of really economic or job displacement. I hope everyone out there will realize that I've shown a tremendous degree of restraint here and have not mentioned Donald Trump's name until we've gotten almost halfway through the program. But that's sort of at the heart of his argument. Well, there are two. That's the more savory part of his argument, that it doesn't make economic sense for us to open the doors to immigration to the degree that we have because it will cost us in some fashion. I'm going to let all three of you take a crack at responding to that, but I'm going to start with Terry.
Well, what I would like to remind our audience today, John, is that the population growth in Marion County is directly attributable to the number of foreign-born who are now making Indianapolis home, who are invigorating neighborhoods, who are starting businesses, who are investing in our city and are contributing to our city as consumers, as taxpayers, as entrepreneurs. And so we at the Immigrant Welcome Center really don't get involved too much in the political discussions of immigration, but we want everyone to understand that they are helping to build the Indianapolis of tomorrow, and they are an integral part of our community today, which is one of the reasons that we do so many different events so that people can meet newcomers from different cultures and really get to know one another as friends and neighbors and to understand the situation or what brought them to the United States and help them to see how life is in many other countries and why the United States continues to be a beacon of hope and opportunity for a lot of people who don't have those opportunities in their homeland.
Paul, I know just enough about economics to be dangerous, but it would strike me that, in fact, there are, for a company, some relatively significant disincentives for them to hire outside of the United, for a U.S. company to hire outside of the United States. A, they've got to assume some fairly significant relocation costs. for the employee. It sounds like they're also going to have to keep people like Angela on staff and working pretty hard to surmount some of the legal barriers. Is some of this argument about economic displacement more sort of just a fear about being drawn into what is increasingly a global economy?
And when you think about, you know, companies like Cummins, we have presence in more than 190 countries, and when you think about the revenue that were coming to the company, that, you know, for Cummins is almost half of our revenue comes from outside of the United States. So back in 2008, when we had the recession, United States was not doing well, but we have our branches in China, in India, and in Brazil. Those are, you know, bringing the money to the company. Those are developing talents to kind of support the growth of the company still. So I think there is a stability issue that, you know, we have such a diverse workforce, we have such a diverse footprint around the globe that's going to help companies like Cummins to, you know, stay stable during different cycles of economic situations. And I think the stability of the economics and the stability of the business is also very important to all different kinds of companies.
Angela, how much of this, I mean, there's also a certain irony here in that most of us who live in this country and this culture think nothing about buying products from other countries. Clearly, a large part of what our federal and state governments do now is try to recruit foreign investment. Is there a certain amount of irony in saying, okay, we're more than willing to take money from other countries, but we're not willing to kind of open our doors and let the folks who follow that money come in and take the jobs?
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I think, another analogy with international students, if we are willing to take the international students and educate them and they go to our universities and pay out-of-state tuition, but then when they graduate, we can't give them a visa to stay in a job that they've been working in their optional practical training period, that's really hard. We kind of dangle the carrot and then we kind of take it away. It's difficult, but also not only for the worker themselves, but for the companies who are relying on this global talent in a global marketplace. I think it's really great. You mentioned Donald Trump and the immigration.
Yeah, that was a big, fat, slow pitch
right
down the middle of the plate.
But I really wanted to bring that back to a positive note. Yeah. I really think that this is great that we're discussing that Mr. Trump has brought immigration back to the forefront of the conversation, and that it is a campaign issue, because I think it should be. I think the immigration system's broken. We obviously, that's a cliche now. Everybody knows it. But the question is, how do we fix it? And we're not going to get anywhere until we raise the awareness bar and the conversation needs to happen, which is why I think this is good. I also think it's good, you know, I think people need to not only understand it, but be personally touched by the issue and know someone who might be going through it or a company who's experiencing this shortage, or someone who has been felt like they a U.S. citizen worker who felt like they got passed over for a job. I think all of these things need to come out in the conversation in order to fix the system.
We are talking about immigration in honor of the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Kevin did and just give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to preface my comment with I am completely open to all immigration. I think what we do with the Hispanic community and children and young adults that were born in the United States, we want to criminalize them, I think, is just abhorrent. I think what's going on in Syria, where I believe we're taking, 300 refugees, is just shameful, especially since we sold the armament that's being used over there. Now, so I think our border should be open. That being said, I find the arguments that companies have to go outside the United States to recruit mostly technical talent, engineering and IT, fallacious. To be, that is, that we have to go outside to recruit to be competitive. I find it very difficult to believe that Germany has to go outside Germany to recruit technical talent, and they're probably the strongest economy in the world. I find it difficult to believe that Japan goes outside and recruits technical talent. I think it's rhetoric from for-profit corporations who have for 30 years waged a war on American workers and wages. That's my comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Kevin. I'm going to give Terry a chance to respond. Thank you again for the call. Terry.
Thank you for calling in, Kevin. And I enjoyed listening to your comments. I am not an economist, but I do know that one of the reasons that Eli Lilly and Cummins and many other multinational companies located in Indianapolis have been so successful and have helped to build the economy in the city of Indianapolis as well as the state of Indiana is because they are a global company and because they understand the importance of global diversity and having, as Paul had mentioned earlier in his comments, some of the attracting the top talent who bring diverse cultures and diverse ideas and diverse thoughts, thought processes to their companies. 40% of Fortune 500 firms were founded by immigrants or their children. And so we also know many immigrants to be the entrepreneurs who are starting major U.S. companies like Google, Pepsi, Microsoft, Google, MasterCard are all currently run by first-generation immigrants. So it's really looking at, the United States as the birthplace of immigration and the place where everyone is an immigrant and really accepting that and building upon that in the future.
Angela, picking up on that point and the discussion we had a couple of minutes, with this predicted worldwide labor shortage, actually some of the countries that they're anticipating, Germany is one of the countries they're anticipating is going to be hit the hardest by this, and Germany is in fact now sort of trying to position itself so that it can recruit talent from outside its borders. Is this going to set off, to some degree, are a lot of these discussions about really preserving a way of life now? Should we be thinking about, okay, it's less about where you were born than what you can bring to the community in which you live?
I think that's a good point. I think, definitely this is it pushes the needle forward. It raises the bar on where we need to be in our educational institutions and how we need to be cultivating talent and candidate pools for companies here in the United States that are qualified for the jobs that are available. I think it is a lot about the market and competition and how much people can bring to the table in order for the companies to remain competitive in a global marketplace.
What are the big challenges with integrating people into this sort of economic culture that we have, Terry?
Well, of course, there are language and cultural barriers for any newcomer coming into the United States. For the most part, many of the foreign-born working in U.S. companies have been U.S. educated, and that's another plus for the U.S. economy, that someone who has been educated here is actually able to contribute to our tax base as consumers and taxpayers.
We are talking about immigration in advance of the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week here on No Limits. My guests are Terry Morris Downs, Executive Director of the Immigrant Welcome Center Angela D. Adams, who's an immigration attorney and on the board of directors of the center, and Paul Liu, who's with Cummins and is on the steering committee with the center. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about immigration in advance of the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week. That's part of National Welcoming Week. My guests are Terry Morris Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, Angela D. Adams, who's an immigration attorney and on the board of directors of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and Paul Liu, who is with Cummins and on the steering committee with the Immigrant Welcome Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Gary did and just reach out to us on Facebook. You can find us at No Limits WFYI. Gary's got a specific question. He says, I do not know all of the issues confronting individuals, refugees, etc., are experiencing when looking for employment. However, I am looking to leave the U.S. for employment prospects. Do you know of any resources available for individuals who are willing to leave if the United States has nothing here for an educated, potentially disabled, technically and other civil rights, human rights questions? Angela, if someone wants to leave the country, are there mechanisms to provide advice there and counsel?
I would say, you know, I practice U.S. immigration law, but I would always recommend whatever country you wish to go to that you contact someone, a qualified attorney in that country, if you do wish to immigrate into the country or work in the country. Many countries have, like the U.S., have differences in whether you're just going to be a tourist, whether you're going to migrate for family reasons, or whether you're going to go to and intend to work lawfully in that country. So every country is going to have different immigration policy. And I don't know the ins and outs of those.
It's probably worth pointing out we're not the only country in the world that has fears about immigration as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. There's immigration in all many, many different countries. In fact, when I was visiting the Dominican Republic, we were, you know, we saw people coming over and they were seeking jobs. And that happens all over the place. So,
Margaret, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
And as usual, really not just interesting, but helpful conversation.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to say and ask if we're moving toward a public discussion where we can cite, I'm going to say percentages, of those immigrants who I think it's important to distinguish in public conversation that there are different categories of immigrant or workers coming as immigrants. One is that the category of professionals recruited by the Cummins and the Eli Lillys. And I think that's a special case because it does, as earlier callers have pointed out, perhaps create a competition. The other categories are, you know, immigrants who are coming to join families, as well as immigrants who, when they get someplace, either become workers for an existing employer or start up. They're entrepreneurs and start up small businesses in neighborhoods. And then the danger, I think on one hand, Trump speaking of it has brought it up, but I think it's more to get discussed again. But I think it is crucial that we speak as many of us as possible to point out that the category he has cited is such a small amount, and how do you measure that anyway? And it's insulting. And if you take the Texas, there's been a wonderful report done down in Texas where it shows the number of immigrants and then the percentage who are taxpaying. And I know that report shows that the tax payments into our government far exceed any benefits that are coming out. So I'm just wondering if this wonderful Center for Immigration does have prepared statistics that break down, even if they're not real precise, but at least the categories.
Okay, Margaret, let me see if I can get an answer for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much
for the call and the question. And I'll throw that one to Angela first.
Margaret, thank you for your call. I think your comments are very well taken. I couldn't agree with you more that we definitely need to enhance the conversation when we're talking about immigration. It's not just a one-size-fits-all approach. It's not black and white. It's not let's deport them all or let's give them amnesty. It's everything in between. There's so many different types of immigrants and immigration categories of eligibility, but yet not a lot of categories of eligibility for certain people who may have entered unlawfully or whatever the case may be. So, yes, you're right. It is not a one-size-fits-all approach. We definitely need to distinguish the different categories of workers coming to the U.S. when we have this conversation. And your point is also well taken that I have also seen studies that suggest that tax payments that immigrants, undocumented and documented, are paying in far exceed what they are taking out.
Yeah, most of the numbers I have seen suggest that, at least in Texas, where they do most of the studies and is sort of ground zero for this discussion and debate, show that undocumented immigrants pay twice as much in taxes as they consume in services on average. And they've been studying this for a couple of years. I'm not aware, and Angela, you and Terry probably would be much better versed in this. I haven't seen any studies that sort of look at this nationally in scope. Mm-hmm. Maybe because it is relatively hard to trace.
Sure. And I've also seen studies that say that, you know, entrepreneurs and immigrant jobs create jobs for U.S. workers and also have a positive impact on the wages, raise the wages of U.S. workers.
We have a caller who didn't want to go on the air who said, since the United States isn't leading in education anymore, is that why we are seeking immigrants from other countries to work in the U.S.? Terry, I'll throw that one to you first.
Well, that's a difficult thing to speak to because I have not seen any particular studies that indicate that we're not leading. I know that many of the STEM jobs and informational jobs seem to be both U.S.-born as well as foreign-born people filling those jobs right now, but I really have no statistics to speak to. The educational, Angela?
I was going to say that, I am very aware that a lot of foreign-born or foreign nationals in other countries are seeking to come study in the United States. We have two world-class institutions in Indiana, which boast one of the highest international student populations in the country. So we are attracting top talent from around the country or from around the world to come study in the United States.
Got a Facebook question from a listener named Michelle, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Michelle says, I would like to clarify your guest statements. Are they implying that American companies cannot remain competitive with American employees / workers? I'll throw that one to you.
Yeah, as I said, you know, a lot of the companies now, American or the United States, is not the only territory that we're playing. So in order to be competitive in not just the United States, but also in China, in India, in Brazil, we need to have diverse workers that has experience growing up there and speak the language, you know, bringing different kind of culture and business perspectives into our daily business operations. So not to say that, you know, we don't have enough United States workers to be stay competitively, but, you know, to be stay competitive in this world stage, in this global stage, I think we need to have the top talent that is from, you know, all around the world. And when you also look at that, you know, companies like Lilly and Cummins, And what they also have been done is, you know, once they have been very successful, they are also investing back to the community. Cummins is really, you know, known for investing in its headquarters, Columbus, Indiana, and all the communities that we operate. And Lilly has been a tremendous, you know, influencer in shaping up the Indianapolis community where it's headquartered. So when you look at both sides, it is, you know, that we need to stay competitive by having so many different diverse talents, but also investing back to the communities where a lot of American citizens benefit from.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Renee, who actually articulates a question that I sort of attempted to raise earlier. She does it much better than I did, so we're going to go with her question. And Renee says, Germany has committed to welcoming at least 800,000 or 1% of their population. There are currently those running for president who will tell you that the root of all our problems are illegals. The U.S. with a population of 318 million with 11 million undocumented means that we're talking about 0.3% of our population. Could your guest speak of how Germany brings immigrants into the fold?
I would like to take that question.
Terry, all yours.
Only because I was recently invited to participate in a study tour on immigration in Berlin, Germany. And there were about 12 of us from the United States who were invited by the American Council on Germany to be their guests in Germany to talk about these specific issues. And it was absolutely fascinating to see how the German approach immigration and are really looking to attract people from other countries, not just Europe, but from all over the world. And I remember specifically one conversation we were having where they felt they were stymied by the language barrier. And so what they had done was to offer free classes in German to many people in other countries, especially those that had struggling economies such as Italy and Greece. And the German government was bringing German language classes to those countries to say, if you can learn German and we can help you learn German, we would be happy to have you come apply for lawful worker status in Germany.
We are talking about immigration in anticipation of the third annual Indianapolis Welcoming Week here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Marion has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Certainly.
One thing I think you'll head this way, but I certainly hope this event is successful and transcends all this politics and economics and concerns. You know, it does seem rather selfish of America to be so concerned about such a small percentage when the rest of the world is getting masses and masses of people that are fleeing for their lives. And I do hope that Hoosiers come to welcome these immigrants. Like it or not, they're here. And, you know, we need to make them welcome. And one thing that the people that are so resistant to, and we so fearful of people coming over and taking our jobs and eating our food and all this, is you forget that also it's good that these companies like Farm Bureau and Big Ag and stuff are coming straight, because as I know that the immigrants that come here are highly exploited, especially by agriculture. You know, they're doing jobs that Americans won't do. And instead of cleaning up our act, so there's people, Hoosiers, that want to work in the confined animal feeding operations, for example. We're bringing in cheap labor. And that's simply a diversion. And I think we have to remember that, you know, we need to care about these people, whether they can serve us or not.
Marion, I'm gonna jump in here real quickly because I want to give Angela and Terry a chance to respond,
okay,
and also to talk a little bit more about the event. Thanks very much for the call, as always, Mary.
Thank you.
Certainly. Take care. Thanks. You know, and that's something, actually, we focus this on a fairly high professional plane. You know, we're talking about engineers and all of that. But Marion kind of alludes to a problem at sort of the other end of the economic chain. We haven't talked about wage theft and some of the other challenges that immigrants face here. Angela, could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, it happens. It happens to U.S. workers and foreign workers alike. People aren't paid the wages that they were due. They actually did the work, but someone, and more importantly, a lot of times, as Marion mentioned, an immigrant worker who is undocumented, that employer may be hanging over their head the fact that they're undocumented, and if they complain or if they do anything, make any noise, they will have them deported. Similarly to, you know, an abused spouse, for example, someone who's undocumented. Those are types of situations that I agree we need to definitely investigate and make sure that that's not happening. And again, I like Marion's comment. I think I would say we can't reduce the conversation of immigration to a bumper sticker. I think, you know, it's really important that we, as educated people in the United States, ask questions and that we learn everything we can about the different types of immigrants and needs and demands and in our country so that we can answer the question of how to fix the system.
Is this, I mean, how do you kind of counter the fear? Because I would say, you know, just listening here, 70% of the calls, emails, Facebook messages have expressed some concern about whether it's economic or even cultural displacement. How do you speak to that, Terry?
We speak to that at the Immigrant Welcome Center through activities such as Welcoming Week to help people get to know one another on a one-on-one level. And I would encourage everyone to participate in at least one of the Welcoming Week activities so that you can get to know someone from a different culture. And, you know, I do understand some of the fears that other people have about, you know, the culture or about the economics and all of that. But I really feel like on a one-on-one level, when you get to know someone from a different country, your heart is changed and it changes your perception of immigrants. I know that's been my case. It's been personally very transformational in my life, just getting to work with so many people from different cultures and getting to know them as friends.
And I should say before we go, to if people do want to attend, what's the URL? Where can they go to get the information again, Terry?
ImmigrantWelcomeCenter.org. And just click on our tab that says Welcoming Week. And we have another tab that says Live Local, Think Global. That'll give you information about our event this Thursday.
Well, I'd like to thank all three of my guests, Terry Morris-Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, Angela D. Adams, who's an immigration attorney and is on the board of the center, and Paul Liu, who is with Cummins and is on the steering committee with the center. Thank you all. I've enjoyed talking with you. It's been a pleasure. Also would like to invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about the school-to-prison pipeline. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.